recommit. Men his favorite will let it be known by the uplifted hand. Down any opposed by like sign. Thank you. Some opposed, but I rule that the motion carries. And it's so ordered. All right, is there further recommendation?
Thank you, Mr. President. Let me say one word about the resolutions committee. We are not the voice, the proponent, trying to argue for or against any resolution. You give this to the resolutions committee and you ask us to put it in a form that might be presented to the convention. And this is what we do. So we're not up here arguing for or against these, though we might be for and against some of them, if you know what I mean. The only thing we do is just give you some information on why we have arrived at our recommendations. I hope you keep this in mind. The next resolution is one regarding the naming of the state mission offering, and Lewis Beal will present this.
Whereas the resolution from our North Carolina Association of Missionaries Conference requesting that we name the September offering for state missions the Lowell Spivey offering for state missions has been considered, and your resolutions committee recommends that this matter be referred to the executive committee of our general board for study and appropriate action. Mr. President, I move the adoption of this substitute resolution.
You hear this motion. Is there a second? I hear a second. Do you understand it? It's a motion to refer. And I will ask that you express your opinion on it. As many as favor, let it be known by the uplifted hand. Thank you so much. Any opposed, by like sign. It's so ordered. Thank you, sir.
Mr. President, the next resolution was the one regarding the Dirksen Amendment, and this will be presented by Charles Coffey.
Mr. President, in view of the following developments. One, the Public Affairs Committee report as it appears on page 90 of our book of reports. Two, the recent appearance of Baptist leaders from our convention in opposition to the Dirksen Amendment. Three, our historic Baptist principles of church-state separation. We recommend the resolution relating to prayer in public schools be rejected by the convention. Brother President, I move the adoption of this substitute resolution.
Brother Coffey, I refer you to page 225. On the question is on the adoption of the resolution. The recommendation of the committee to the contrary, notwithstanding. This is what Brother Roberts says about it, so we'll have to take some action on the resolution.
I
have been requested to have the resolution read.
You've got to have the original read.
The original has to be read and acted upon. So I will call for the reading of the original motion, the original resolution.
The original reads in this fashion: believing there are other North Carolina Baptists, such as myself and church, Gibson Baptist Church, Gibson, North Carolina, which has already gone on record regarding its approval, who are in favor of the Dirksen Prayer Amendment to the United States Constitution pertaining to voluntary prayer in our public schools, be it resolved that this honorable body go on record voicing her approval of same amendment, the Dirksen Prayer Amendment.
I recognize Brother Asbury, who has a right to speak first on this matter. He is speaking to the original resolution, which In the beginning, I stated to you that we assume that this had been moved and seconded by virtue of the fact that it went to the Resolutions Committee. This is the action involving passing it to the Resolutions Committee.
Brother President, may I ask a point of order here?
All right.
Did this receive a second?
Did his motion receive a second?
You assume it, no one objects. They can call for a second if they want to.
Would you like to have a second so that this brother may be heard? Is there a second? I hear a second. All right.
What is the motion?
The original resolution.
That be adopted?
Yes.
Mr. President.
All right, Brother Esmond.
Now go ahead.
Yes, you may speak for the original motion.
Mr. President, some have said that the Dirksen prayer amendment is not necessary because the Supreme Court decision, so it is claimed, still prevents voluntary prayer. Senator Irwin said that the Supreme Court decision still permits voluntary prayer. Point two. However, Dr. James Bowman pointed out in the Charlotte Observer that the Supreme Court said, quote, neither the fact that the prayer is denominationally neutral nor the fact that its observance on the part of the students is voluntary can serve to free it from the limitations of the Establishment Clause of the First Amendment. Point three, following the exchange of viewpoint between Senator Irwin and Dr. Bowman, the Charlotte Observer, which had supported Senator Irwin on this point, admitted that the court decision does not say that voluntary prayer is permitted.
Thank you, sir. Dr. Finlater has asked if he might speak to the motion.
Mr. President, I should like to speak briefly in opposition to the motion. Fellow messengers, the motion, of course, calls for an amendment to the Constitution of the United States, particularly an amendment to amend the very thing that has separated our church from our state and given us the kind of peace that we didn't have in the old country while we came over here. To have this amendment in process would mean that you would have to have it first passed in Congress, both houses, then presented to the states, and then all of Pandora's box of emotions and religious fervor and hostility would be released in the following weeks and months and perhaps years upon our people. In this country, you may remember that when the Supreme Court first made this decision, our Secretary of State, Douglas Branch, came out in favor of it, and it was supported by our Baptist people across the state. Virtually every major denomination in this country has spoken against the Dirksen Amendment. It would be incredible if we Baptists in North Carolina would now say, let's go out for it. We as Baptists are against it because of our principle, historic principle of church separation, state, church. We are against it theologically. In order to have any prayer acceptable to the diverse elements that make up our schools today, the prayer has to be watered down to the common denominator of almost nothing in order to prevent the offending of religious sensitivities. This, of course, would distort and vitiate the integrity and purity of our Baptist theological witness. Let me urge that from now and forever, we have done with any kind of allowed or permitted. Imagine the government having the right to permit or allow prayer in any of our tax-supported institutions. And if you will read this proposed amendment carefully, it means not only schools, but any kind of building supported in part or totally by public taxation. Let's end it now and forever.
Mr. President.
That microphone is, what's the number over there?
Number one.
Number one.
Roger Jackson from Yadkinville.
Thank you, Brother Jackson.
I'm offering a motion that this matter be tabled.
There's a motion and a second. Did I hear a second?
You can't table something that can't properly be brought up again now at this convention. This is time set aside for resolution. So actually, motion to table, unless it can be brought up in miscellaneous tonight, is out of order. Unless it can be brought up then.
The parliamentarian who has promised me to help me and has done so says that you cannot table something that cannot be brought up again at this convention, and if you move to do so on a resolution, it has to be brought up again tonight at the miscellaneous order of business, and I would personally prefer not to do this, and I'm sure that's your...
My motion is to table forever.
I'll ask the parliamentarian about that.
If the brother wishes to table forever, he'll simply make a motion for what is called indefinite postponement.
Do you want to make that motion? All right. Is there a second of that motion? Do you understand the question? Are you ready for it? As many as will favor the indefinite postponement of this matter, you let it be known with the uplifted hand. Down, any opposed, by like sign. There are some who oppose it. It was not unanimous, but it carried. Now then, Brother Gregory, you have one more. A resolution.
Thank you, Mr. President. Now, this is a resolution that everybody's going to vote for. Everybody. Don't want to see a hand that's not up, and it'll be presented by Dr. Warren Hike.
Mr. President, your Committee on Resolutions recommends that the convention express its deep appreciation to the following: to the pastors and churches of Pilot Mountain Association for their hospitality to all convention messengers, to the Forsyth County Rescue Squad for manning the first aid room, to the Convention Arrangements Committee, and especially to its chairman, L.H. Hollingsworth, for a well-conceived and helpful program, to President Carl Bates and other officers for their fair consideration in handling the procedures of the convention, to the newspapers, radio, and television stations for coverage given in presenting news of the convention to the public at large, to all special guests of the convention, special choirs, and especially Winston-Salem State, Salem, and Wake Forest College choirs, and for all others who made contributions to our program, to the staff of the Winston-Salem Coliseum for their efforts to make our convention comfortable and our visit to Winston-Salem a pleasant one, to the churches of Winston-Salem for local arrangements in pre-convention and related meetings. Mr. President, I move the adoption of these resolutions.
Your second? It is seconded. You ready for the question? As many of you as favored will let it be known by standing, please. I'm always afraid in my church at home to let folks stand to vote on a motion because it's so easy to start walking. Now sit down real quickly. You've been wonderful during these days, and we have some important matters for the rest of this session. I hope you will stay. I have one matter that I've been asked to clear up. I have a note here from Martha Swain Wood, who I assume is a messenger to this convention, who says, just for the record, there were at least two opposing votes to the final resolution adopted by this convention on alcoholism. But both the substitute and final resolution did not pass unanimously. Please clarify this. Thank you, and I'm happy to do so. If I inadvertently said it is unanimous, I want to correct that, and I'm happy to do so and appreciate this being called to my attention. We come now to the...
Mr. President, number four.
Number four, will you give some power on number four, please?
President, this is Henry Stokes from Tryon.
Kenneth Stokes?
Henry Stokes.
Henry Stokes,
yes.
From Tryon.
Yes. In the absence of our chairman of the Public Affairs Committee, Mr. Adrian Newton, I don't believe he's in the hall. I think he went back to Raleigh yesterday. And because I had a minor part in putting together this report on the Public Affairs Committee, I would like to say this, that I think that this report, as it is now, is not in very suitable form to be put out as a pamphlet to be distributed to public school officials in our state. And I just wonder if this committee, or this convention rather, would not, by common consent, permit the Public Affairs Committee of next year, or the convention, whoever it is that's responsible for writing this pamphlet, to be at liberty simply to draw from material rather than print it as it is. About two-fifths of this material simply explains why we voted against the Dirksen Amendment and what the Baptists did to do it. I don't think this would be very interesting or very readable to the
I believe by common consent we can do this, Brother Henry, and thank you for calling this to our attention. Now then, the next order of business, I want to recognize Brother L.J. Morris of Raleigh for the television and radio ministry. Brother Morris, you have 10 minutes for this order of business. Will you come at this time, please?
Brother President and messengers to the convention, just one simple statement at the outset of this presentation. I'm confident that the Baptists of North Carolina and Baptists of the Southern Baptist Convention do not have a more far-reaching missionary ministry than the ministry carried on through mass media. To present this report, I want to present it in two segments. We work so very closely with the Southern Baptist Radio and Television Commission, and the first segment of this report will be presented by Claude O. Shields, the Eastern representative of the Southern Baptist Radio and Television Commission. Now here is Mr. O. Shields.
Once again, it's a privilege to extend greetings to you from the Radio and Television Commission. This morning, many of you had an opportunity to see by film some of the work that goes on at the International Communications Center in Fort Worth. For a few moments here, I'd like to pass along to you a few facts. Facts oft times are boring, but I feel that this is information you need to know and are entitled to know, because we are one of your agencies and we operate through the Cooperative Fund. The Southern Baptist Radio and Television Commission is in a position today to press the case for its programming with the broadcasting industry as never before. Factors which make this so include the new International Communications Center with all of its facilities, appointment of new staff members to key positions in this agency, and the beginning of a corps of field representatives. The 23 programs produced by the Commission were broadcast on an all-time high number of radio and television stations at the end of last year, more than 2,300. Actually, the Commission appeared on 78 4/10% of the entire broadcast facilities of the nation between April 1, 65, March 31, 66. If one station ran this amount of programming, it would take 2,167 days, or almost 6 years, of continuous broadcasting. And listen to this figure here. In 1965, the value of the public service time given to the Commission and Southern Baptist by the nation's radio and television stations totaled over $3.8 million. The Commission has a program of preaching on radio and television. That is its primary purpose for existence. And while the trend among many broadcasters today seems to be away from religious programming, the Southern Baptist message is being heard on more stations by more people in more ways than ever before. Southern Baptist programs received 7.5 hours in time on the three television networks this past year, the equivalent of 15 half-hour programs. Among these was The Inheritance, hour-long special produced jointly with the National Broadcasting Company, which documented the beginnings of the Christian faith through the biblical archaeology of five countries. This film is available to your church today. During the spring of 66, representatives of the Commission joined NBC TV in filming the story, The Life of Christ. This will be shown on the network in spring of 67. During 1965, the radio department duplicated 120,000 tapes for all purposes, domestic broadcast, overseas programs, and convention tape packages. 13 programs were produced each week for domestic use and 8 in other languages for foreign use. The Commission also has a program for audience building. Many state Baptist papers have provided space for the regular listing of Southern Baptist programs throughout the year.
and assisted greatly in providing audience within the denomination. We also use direct mail, and this has proved most effective through the years for reaching the largest number of people at the lowest cost. The Beam, the Commission's monthly magazine, has served well in telling the story of the agency to large numbers of people who work in the broadcast industry, as well as to pastors and to laymen of the Southern Baptist Convention. Christian home music is another facet of audience building which is destined to grow with the addition of Joanne Shelton this past year as director of program music. The commission also has a program of inquiry and counseling. Close cooperation with the Seminary Extension Department and Dr. Ralph Herring, director of SED, in the adaptation of existing course material, it has provided Southern Baptists with what is thought to be the first radio Bible correspondence course with seminary credit available. The first course was offered on the Baptist Hour and on the International Sunday School lesson programs, with major growth expected in 1966. The basic Bible correspondence course in Spanish is still offered on Radio in Mexico and South America, with approximately 1,000 persons having taken part to this date in its three phases. We also have a program of technical assistance. Requests have increased annually from all over the world for technical assistance of various kinds. Most often they come from pastors or from missionaries who need program material, ideas for a local opportunity on radio or TV, how to plan for radio TV areas and equipment in a new church building, and on. News programs, as we mentioned this morning, for state Baptist conventions were started this past 12 months in North Carolina, Georgia, and Kentucky, in addition to news programs already established in Tennessee, Arkansas, and in Oklahoma. So naturally, the question now comes, where do we go from here? You know, the electronic communication is no fad. To the contrary, this science is only in the birth period of its life. As man spreads his wings in space, as man builds more tightly secured high-rise apartment complexes, as man personalizes his radio and television equipment by miniaturization so that his wristwatch may contain both, so will the ministry of the commission increase its importance to our convention's goals of reaching men for Christ. We predict that the next age to be listed in the social, cultural, and economic history of man may well be called the transistor age, or at least the electronic age. And its impact on man's future will be as great as or greater than the Industrial Revolution, the Atomic Age, or even the Space Age. For in each of those, man was reaching out, but in this one, he is touching his soul through his eyes and ears. Radio and television missions is a major missionary force. Its role in Southern Baptist affairs can only increase. Our potential is as yet unmeasured, but we know that we stand on the threshold of a boundless future in God's plan of redeeming this world and reconciling it to himself. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Oshields. And the second segment of this presentation will be a few notes concerning your own convention series, and then we'll present Jerry Potter, Neil Payton, along with one of the deaf in our own state to offer her own testimony in connection with this series of programs. The Department of Program Services has a responsibility of producing these programs for radio and television. The convention series, titled A Light in My Path, is a mission work of the convention designed to reach minority groups, the deaf, the aging, and those on beds of illness and the unchurched. This program is 30 minutes in length and produced on videotape. It features a gospel message in music and in word, both in sign language and in sound. The program features Reverend Jerry Potter and Reverend Neil Payton as a Department of the Deaf ministers, with musicians Mrs. Art Four, Mrs. A.J. Sutter, Sylvia Grubbs, Jimmy Ringgold, along with Mrs. John Stokes as their interpreter. The program is sponsored by the Baptist State Convention of North Carolina on a sustaining basis and presented over a statewide network of six television stations. These are WRAL Raleigh, WECT Wilmington, WLOS Asheville, WFMY Greensboro, WBT Charlotte, WNCT Greenville, and also providing coverage for North Carolina Baptists are WTVC Chattanooga, Tennessee, WISTV Columbia, South Carolina. This series of programs is also carried by 11 other stations outside of North Carolina and is sponsored by a Baptist convention or a Baptist group. The convention is doubly grateful for the generous expression on the part of WRAL-TV in Raleigh for its staff and production facilities in the production of this series of programs. It is interesting to note that this telecast has been presented on a continuing weekly basis for almost 6 years by these cooperating stations. We wish to express our deep appreciation to each station for its contribution to the religious life of the people of the community through the presentation of this series. North Carolina Baptists are deeply grateful for an increasing statewide ministry on the part of the stations throughout the state through the presentation of the gospel message. The Department of Program Services also produces a weekly television series, Bible Storytime for Preschool Children, Church of Our Fathers, a weekly telecast, and a news telecast, and Youth Faces Life, a program for youth. Our newest venture is a 30-minute television radio series on our Baptist colleges. In behalf of the Baptist State Convention, we once again wish to express our appreciation for the cooperative spirit and the generous sharing of time on the part of the broadcasters of North Carolina. Brother President, I move the adoption of these reports, then may we present the personnel and the testimony.
Your time is up, Brother Morris, and we would have to extend the time if you, it's not necessary to adopt a report that's brought to this convention unless it carries a recommendation. Would you be willing to just present these people? How much more
she
time do you
have? 1 minute of presentation of the testimony.
I give Brother Morris 1 minute of presentation that he asked for. All right, Brother. No action necessary. We'll just receive the report as a matter of information.
Thank you, Brother President. May I present Neil Payton, who is one of the ministers on the Light Under My Path series. Neil, will you stand? Jerry, will you come and present your guest and a witness to this series of programs?
This is Mrs. Oliver Clark from Thomasville, and she wants to tell you what the television program means to her. I would like to tell what the television program, Light Unto My Path, means to me and to so many of my deaf friends. Few television programs have much meaning for a deaf person because deaf people cannot hear what is said. It is also difficult for deaf people in many areas to attend church because they do not have an interpreter. But through the television program, Light Unto My Path, many deaf people can learn about Jesus and can learn how to receive Jesus as Savior because the program is given in sign language, and deaf people can easily understand as they see their own language on the television screen. The program also means a lot to other groups, such as invalids and shut-ins. Many hearing parents who have deaf children rejoice to know that there is a way for their children to understand the gospel. Many of my deaf friends from other states tell me that they also see and enjoy the program. It is shown on 11 other stations in other states, in addition to the 6 stations here in North Carolina. In Thomasville, we watch the program in church. A television set has been placed in our classroom, and we watch the program from 9:30 until 10 o'clock. And then our teacher, a hearing lady named Mrs. Shirley Prince, teaches the Sunday school lesson to us in sign language. Several classes in North Carolina and also in other states also watch the program together in church. We, the deaf, are very grateful for the Baptists of North Carolina and the television stations for making the program possible for us who cannot hear. Thank you.
Thank you, Jerry. I'll ask the seminary representatives to come. Also, Dr. Howard Ford, who will present Dr. Jess Fletcher of the Foreign Mission Board of Richmond. I want to recognize the seminary representatives and give Dr. Dale Moody, who has the capacity to cram a 30-minute message into a 5 or 10 minute presentation. I think it's understood that he is to speak for the seminary representatives. But I'd like to recognize at this time Dr. John Price from the New Orleans Seminary. Dr. Price, we're delighted to have you in this convention. I want also to recognize Dr. John Eddings, who is at Southeastern Seminary. Dr. Eddings, will you stand, please? And Dr. Moody, will you come? I am happy to present to you Dr. Dale Moody, who addressed the pastors' conference yesterday, and this is as close as I've ever come to laying claim to scholarship or fame. He and I were classmates, but he kept at it, and I'm delighted to present him to you at this time.
Thank you so very much, Dr. Bates, and may I thank all of you for the opportunity to speak just a few words on behalf of all of our seminaries. You might want to call these few moments Moody's meanderings, but it's intended to be a brief statement of what I believe to be the state of our seminaries. First of all, I would bring a word from our administrators. I have asked some of them what I should say, and everyone I ask sent you one message: money is needed. I'm sure if any of the presidents were speaking, or if all of them were here on the platform, I would not have any objection to that remark. Seriously, we are facing a real problem. We are losing seminary professors, not only to state universities, but we are losing them to Baptist colleges because of the lack of funds. That is what I would like for you to hold uppermost in your mind as you think of the allocation of funds in the future. This is an honest and frank statement of fact, and I am sure I am speaking what every seminary president would say. Second thing I would bring to you is a word from our students. I deliberately singled out some North Carolina students and asked them what I should say down in their native states. And may I say, in our seminary, we have some very unusual North Carolina students, as I'm sure other seminaries do. I think that a word spoken from this platform could be used to describe their attitude. Dr. Whitaker's devotional message had a great deal to say about radical freedom. But the word that has been given to me was in the Home Mission magazine, not from one of the seminary publications. It was a warning to Southern Baptists about mental isolation. I thought that was a splendid editorial by Dr. Knight. I do not mean to imply that our seminaries are suffering from mental isolation. As a matter of fact, I think we enjoy great freedom because there is a tradition of freedom that we have inherited. I think in these days of anxiety, though, and cross currents, there is a great danger that we may find ourselves narrowing our contacts with other Christian groups and with non-Christian groups to the point that what Dr. Knight is talking about may happen in our seminaries: mental isolation. The reason I give for this warning is this: that any time we have mental isolation, you will see extremism develop. And it doesn't make any difference whether it is the radical left or the radical right. Extremism is a very dangerous thing. The surest way to have balanced theological education is to have a real forum of free discussion. And if we believe that we are advocating the truth, we have absolutely nothing to fear. And I hope you will support us, because I do not believe you have anything to fear in freedom. And the sharpest students, I believe, in our seminaries would say, give us seminaries where there is a breath of fresh air, where we can discuss every great theological issue and every great social issue of our time and discuss it without being threatened because we think. I hope I am not saying to you what I do not intend to say. I'm simply saying that Baptists of all people must not give up freedom. Now that comes really from some seminary students which I spoke with when I asked what should I say. Now the third thing I think would come from our faculties, all of our seminary faculties. Within the last 5 years, we have seen a tremendous ferment in Christianity. If you want to get something old across, you call it something new. It's amazing today that within the last 5 years, we have seen about four different currents of thought, all attached, all with the adjective new. Now, of course, someone has said that the devil served his roast beef in the Garden of Eden, has been giving hash out ever since. And that sometimes these things called new are just old ideas rehashed. That's not altogether true. But may I just speak a brief word about this, and we're trying in our seminaries to wrestle with these cross currents of thought. One of the things you often hear today is what is called the new hermeneutic. In other words, we need to give attention to religious language. To a movement like this, I think I must say yes and no. Certainly, we get afflicted with cliches and we throw out religious jargon that means very little to us and very little to others. I would be one of the first persons, I think, to say that we need to be precise and clear and clean up our religious jargon. But I would also say it is far more important that we have something to say. Not that we just have words, but that we have something to talk about when we get our language cleared up. That is one of the currents of thought. The second current of thought is what is called the new quest. I spoke about this to the pastor's conference, and I have far more sympathy for this, the new quest for the historical Jesus. There was a time just recently when we almost lost Jesus in a cloud of mythology. And I'm very much in sympathy, and I think most of our seminaries would be very much in sympathy for this new interest in what really did happen in that first century. But we must say yes and no, perhaps, even to a movement with that much health and that much promise. To the pastor's conference, I also spoke on the third point, and I will not repeat myself here. It is called the new theology. Now, actually, my sympathy wanes a great deal right here, because I think it could well be called the new mythology. Because much of the thought that goes under the name of a new theology is very familiar to those who are acquainted with the history of religious thought. Nevertheless, I think that in any movement that causes us to get down in earnest about talking about God has some merit to it. When I was invited to speak on this theme to the University of Louisville and found the students willing to talk about God for 6 hours, I was rather grateful. Rather grateful that they were willing to talk about God. And I think I would want to say again, we're not talking about a peripheral issue when we talk about God. The fourth movement that we must wrestle with, and we ask your support and your understanding as we try to wrestle with it, is what is called the new morality, which by now you know is the idea that we only have one law in Christianity, and that is love. Well, of course, you can find good New Testament text for that in the book of Romans, that love is the fulfillment of the law. But sometimes people assume that there are no norms to Christianity, so I've been speaking a great deal along this line recently, because I think many people assume that every situation is utterly unique, and therefore we cannot learn anything from the long experience of the church and from our collective experience today. And they call this a new morality, in which you just, on the impulse of the moment, do what you think love would tell you to do. This is called the new morality. Now, this is really nothing new. I remember over 20 years ago, when I was a student, that there was an issue that was raised like this in one of the German universities. You see, it happens in Germany 20 years ago, and it happens in America 20 years later. And I remember now that one of the old German professors with a white goatee was insisting that you must always wait until you get into the situation before you know what you're going to do. His wife had a lot more common sense than he did and came up with a question like this. She said, "Now, Professor, suppose you were out here by the lake and a young lady should make an improper approach to you. What would you do?" Well, the old professor's goatee twitched a little bit because he immediately sensed that he was in trouble. He knew that if he said he didn't know what he would do when a young lady made an improper approach to him, that he was in a very bad light. He knew that if he said that he knew what he would do, that his theory would be shot to pieces. So he stroked his goatee once more and looked at his wife and said, "Why, dearie, I would just pray the Lord would forgive me." Well, I think that this does illustrate that what we're facing today, this idea of love alone. The other day I spoke in chapel on this, and one of my colleagues came and said, "Moody, I've found a situation in which I think it was right to lie." He'd been reading the story of the old Long Run Baptist Church out on the edge of Louisville, from which both Harry Truman and Abraham Lincoln descended. Their families belonged to that church. He said, in the frontier days, there was a man in the old Long Run church with five children. The Indians raided the village and killed four of his children. But after a while, one of the Indians returned and said to the man, "We have heard you have a fifth child, do you?" Well, the good Baptist deacon, of course, loved his fifth child. He'd lost four already. So he said to the Indian, "I don't have a fifth child." This came up in the business meeting. In those days, the discipline committee was the most active committee in the church. And so they brought him up by the discipline committee, and they had a furious discussion in the old Long Run church. And for many years after that, there were two factions in the church. One was called the Lying Baptist, and the other was called the No-Lying Baptist. Well, I think we would all agree that an instant like this is rather abnormal. But I pointed out to my friend that when Paul spoke about putting away lying and speak the truth, he was talking about us speaking the truth to the people that we profess to love. Well, I said a little too much about that, but let me just mention the last thing, and this may cut across some of the currents that we're involved in now. And the last thing, the issue, is this so-called new form of the church. I may sound like a real conservative, even a reactionary, when I say this. I've even heard things here in this convention that I don't agree with at this point. The institutional church today is under violent attack. This is called the new form of the church. I want to say, and it sounds very dogmatic to say it so briefly, that I believe one of the most disastrous things that we can do is to de-emphasize the importance of the gathered congregation of people upholding and upbuilding one another in Christian love. This is no time to disband the local church. When I hear people talk about where the action is, I think sometimes they're talking about out in the corridor there. But
we're going to have to extend the time.
Just a word. But I want to say this. I worship in a lot of churches where there's some action going on too. And the last word I want to say is this, that I believe all of our seminaries are dedicated to training men and women to go into those churches so that there'll be more action there. Because, my brothers and sisters, if God is doing more outside the church than he's doing inside the church, it's high time that you and I repent. And if we repent, there'll be more action here than there.
Thank you, David.
You know, we must hear more of these things. And I just hate, like everything, to interrupt a speaker who is so to the point here. But we have invited a man known to most of you whom I'll not present. That honor belongs to Dr. Howard Ford. And we must not, to put him under any undue pressure, And I think that we want to have more on this, and maybe next year we can have something on this from this distinguished speaker who has just stirred our hearts. Now, Dr. Ford, will you come and present our speaker for the hour?